If you walk around dumb with your head up your bum, you're a liberal. As the economy drops and you think Biden rocks, you're a liberal. If you think crap is free and don't care it costs me, you're a liberal. If you mask in your car all alone, you're bizarre and a liberal.
These are the coffin homes of Hong Kong. An estimated 200,000 people live in these critically tiny spaces. From sleeping to cooking, these coffin cubicles are flats which are divided into 15 120 square foot apartments. One man who suffers from sclerosis pays $300 a month for 18 square feet, and the bathrooms are shared by at least a dozen other residents.
This purse is made entirely of the bills of the Venezuelan currency, the bolivares. Inflation is so high that this money is now completely worthless. And so my friend Jorge over here has gathered a ton of this stuff and turned it into commodities, into purses, into sculptures.
It is worse than it sounds, and it sounds pretty bad.
The country's inflation rate will rise to 1,000,000%.
Esto lo que yo tengo aquí, el que estuviera esto en Venezuela tenía plata, era...
Yep, that's what socialism will get you. And that's what they're trying to push here in America. They're doing it through both race to divide us and class is what they're trying to do. Here's a city council member in Denver who's saying you got to tax the whites to pay back for history in blacks. It's basic socialism. Take from one to give to the other, basically. All right, I'm going to play these back to back. So hopefully you got your nerd pills listening to some of this. Here we go.
Capitalism was built on stolen land, stolen labor, and stolen resources. And a check today could not undo the cumulative impact of generations of that stolen wealth in all of those categories. And so I think it has to come in the form of land, labor, and resources in an ongoing fashion. And there are structures that we have that could be flipped to begin to do that, that reparations. In fact, my opponent here mentioned Five Points and the corridor and what has happened to our businesses there. Part of what has catalyzed that exponential decimation of Black businesses is the Five Points bid. The business improvement district, which further steals from the community through taxation. And I think there's a model that could be redistributed. Instead of a bid collecting extra taxation from the Black and Brown businesses that are struggling, you could be collecting those extra taxes from white-led businesses all over the city and redistributing them to Black and Brown-owned businesses who are not part of it, or who are simply just Black or Brown owned. And that's one way to give back in the business form fashion. I think when we talk about resources being returned, this is where consumer owned or municipally owned resources are important, because we are locked out of owning our control or over our basic needs, like water or utilities or any of those things. There is a way for us to change that structure and put Black and Brown people in ownership positions over our basic needs. I also really want to point out that the Basic Income Project could be, if it were focused, an important way to return a check to an individual in an ongoing fashion, but in its current format is not reparations or not close to reparations. One, it doesn't focus on Black and Brown people. Two, what they are experimenting with is unhoused people, and it's not a livable or prosperous wage, it is a welfare wage. And we know how that has worked. Those types of checks have not served us well, and we need to go far beyond welfare wages and go to prosperous wages, because we don't want to just survive anymore, and reparations goal should not be survival. It should be repairing the harm which is this entire economy.
Thank you.
Socialism 101. Watch this one. This is in Venezuela. You've seen what it was like in Venezuela. Here's someone that came from that area. These people believe if they control everybody's money, they can do it better than someone being productive and climbing up the ladder themselves, which worked for hundreds of years. But now they want total 100%. That's what they want, rule. That's basically what they want.
But it's bigger in Latin America.
Yeah, it's the constant in Latin America. We have like 50 shades of socialism, right? You have extreme socialism in countries like Venezuela, Nicaragua, Cuba, and then you have less, but that are also dramatic, especially when you talk about massive inflation like Argentina or Brazil or Mexico. Moderate socialism like Honduras or Guatemala, but we're all part of that same mentality that the government has these magical powers in order to control the economy, tell you how to live your life, and definitely not let you be free because you're too dumb or too poor in order to be free and responsible of your own life.
Proverb, never attempt to cure what you don't understand. Woke is Marxism, evolved to attack the West. If you don't understand that, you will not act correctly. You will not cure it, and it will conquer your countries. It will conquer all of Europe, and we will have a very, very long, sustainable, and inclusive future with absolutely no freedom. Because the goal is to make us into what they call global citizens. Have you heard this term? This term is nonsense. There's no global sovereign, so there is no global citizenship. There's no relationship because there's no ruler, and we don't want a ruler of the globe. It's a nonsense term. But they tell you, if you actually read their literature, what is a global citizen? It's somebody, I kid you not, I make no joke, they say this themselves, it's somebody who supports the 17 Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations Agenda 2030. That's a global citizen. And they say, what are the rights of a global citizen? This is in a book about global citizenship education published 2 years ago. What are the rights of a global citizen? And the answer, one paragraph later, is we're not that interested in rights with global citizenship. It's more about global responsibilities. In other words, slavery. This is a pivotal moment in the history of the Western world. The model that they are pushing us toward, using the means and mechanisms of that place, is the model we see in China. If you want to know what your future looks like if we don't stop the woke, look at China. Look at the social credit system. Look at the oppression. Look at people disappearing for having the wrong opinions. One of their greatest billionaires, Jack Ma, said the wrong thing about the government and disappeared. A billionaire. If you want to know what the future of Europe and America and the Five Eyes or whatever the countries, it's China. That's the model. So we have to fight back against woke, but to fight back against woke, we have to understand it. And I will close by restating my thesis. Woke is Marxism evolved to take on the West. And it's been very successful so far because we haven't known our enemy. We cannot name our enemy. And I've come here to name our enemy. So thank you for your time and attention and letting me do that.
Wait, France, Spain, Italy, France, bankrupt. Spain, 40% youth unemployment. Italy, they take the whole month of August off. Those are wonderful examples of socialism. Greece, bankrupt. Portugal, bankrupt. France, bankrupt. Italy, bankrupt. Venezuela, bankrupt. Argentina, bankrupt. Cuba, I mean, you want to keep on going? Answer me a question. If socialism is so great, if socialism was so great, why are people fleeing Venezuela for America and not fleeing America for Venezuela? If socialism was so great, why do they flee Havana for Miami, but they don't flee Miami for Havana? If socialism was so great, why did over 100 million people die under the sickle and hammer over the last 100 years? It's called democratic socialism, which
Bernie Sanders' ideology has killed 100 million people in the last 100 years. Okay? Keep going. Get it out, because I'm drinking some water. Keep yelling. No, seriously. It helps me.
I'm sure no one here needs to fire the army or the police department or the military. Let's get rid of all purely capitalist.
Okay, let's name it. The USSR. That of course, isn't socialist at all, right? Only 61 million people murdered. The great Chinese leap forward under Mao Zedong, 35 million people murdered. Under the Cambodian communist regime, 2 million people. The Vietnamese communist regime, 1.6 million people. Under Polish socialism, isn't it funny how mad they get when you start naming these numbers? It's great. 1.5 million people murdered. Under Yugoslavian socialism, over 1 million people. North Korean socialism, 1.6 million people, for a grand total of 129 million people murdered in the last 100 years because of socialism. That's a really great track record. It's wonderful. It's really good. It's really good. Thank you. So, how many... So let's keep on diving into it. It's socialism. You know, the very funny thing is you can see their ideology. They don't believe in individualism, so they all talk at the same time and they have no effectiveness at all. It's very collective of them.
And then they're going to use race crap to bring us down, you know, and to get this, to keep us divided and keep us from uniting and seeing that socialism doesn't work. But they got to get you hating someone else in order to do this. Here's a lot of truth bombs that took them down in England here. Shut all the liberals right up. Listen to this.
Gang, you're going to love this one. Wait until you see what happens when an actual historian starts dropping truth bombs about reparations, slavery, and colonialism on woke students at Cambridge University. This is Rafe Haydo-Mankoo, a well-known historian and television commentator in Britain. And recently he did what many believe would be impossible. He left an audience of woke college students at the Cambridge Union absolutely stunned silent over historical facts regarding what really happened under British colonialism.
But, you know, in recent months, we've seen the issue of slavery and colonialism expand beyond campuses, as we've now got, of course, from Barbados to Jamaica, prominent Caribbeans also calling for Britain to pay reparations for slavery and the consequences of colonialism. And Madam Speaker, were we engaged in this debate in 1807 or 1833, I likely would have crossed the floor to support the motion opposite, because, of course, the victims of the horrendous horrors of slavery would have been alive and deserving of damages. But it's not 1807, it's not 1907, it's not even 2007. Over two centuries have passed since Britain led the world as the first empire in history to abolish slavery, and the right of reparations died long ago, because reparations are fundamentally about matters of tort law. The purposes of damages, restoration of reparation, is to restore the victim, the slave, to what they were in before the damage occurred, slavery. Or victim only can receive damages, not their descendants. And therein lies the rub, because some six or seven generations separate those alive today from their British Empire slave ancestors. And whilst not just yet, thank you so much, whilst it's undeniable that 19th century slaves suffered unspeakable horrors, in what way can this lead one to conclude that their great, 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 great grandchildren are also victims and deserving of reparations too? Better and higher quality of life than they would have had had their ancestors remained in Africa. And that's an indisputable fact.
Now, I really liked how he framed the debate there. reparations are inescapably a matter of tort law. And the purpose of tort law is to compensate individuals that suffer personal or property damage because of another's wrongful conduct. And the fundamental flaw in the reparations argument is that neither the victim nor the victimizer of the horrors of slavery are alive today. Reparation is simply unintelligible when dealing with the descendants of victims and victimizers rather than the victims and victimizers themselves. How do you even begin to justify the notion that it's ethical for an innocent person today to be culpable for the sins of their forefathers? Why are descendants entitled to damages for sins committed against their great-great-great-great-grandfathers? Why should an entire population pay for reparations? A tiny fraction of the previous generation were guilty of owning slaves. Out of a population of millions, both in the UK and the States, only a few thousand were actual slave owners. Why should Irish, Italians, Slavs, and a whole host of other ethnicities pay for reparations when they themselves were often victims of social disenfranchisement? Do they get reparations now? And if so, from whom? So this is the problem when you try to apply tort law to situations and contexts that have nothing to do with.
What was framed in terms of Britain? Why are no activists asking for reparations from the African? Over the ocean, and millions more slaves were kept in slavery in Africa by other Africans, just as were being transported across the Atlantic. Why does nobody ever actually speak about that unpleasant truth? What about the Arabs and the Muslims who bought and sold African slaves for centuries before the British arrived and continued to do so into the 20th century until the British and the French tried to stop it? And indeed, what about the slavery that carries on today? The International Labour Organization says that currently approximately 7 in every 1,000 Africans is a slave. 10 million people. In 2017, CNN reported hundreds of slaves are sold every week in Libya. So much energy is given to historic reparation and the historic plight of slaves. I would have more time for the argument if the people actively pursuing that course of action were equally vocal about surely the far more horrendous plights of slaves today, where there are more slaves today in bondage, in slavery, than crossed over the Atlantic. So where are the protests outside the Nigerian High Commission? Where are the protests outside the embassies of Niger, which has 800,000 slaves today? What about Mali and Chad and Sudan and Cameroon? It's almost as if there's an ulterior motivation behind the call for apologies and reparations exclusively from Britain.
Yes, and obviously what he's saying there about reparations in the UK equally applies to the pressures we have here in the States. Now, what this historian brought up there was the rather inconvenient fact of African participation and profit in the slave trade. Okay, things were not simply as clear-cut as reparations rhetoric would have us believe. It's been amply documented how Africans themselves profited off the slave trade, often in collaboration with local chiefs, and served as intermediaries with European and Arab purchasers. That fact alone should be enough to dispel any semblance of plausibility for reparations rhetoric. As you probably know, a number of financial experts are predicting that things are about to blow. The economy is sputtering out of control, and you need to prepare now for the economic catastrophe that may indeed be right around $1,000 in free silver.
Per head of the Bahamas is higher than Portugal and is comparable to Spain and Italy. You never hear that, do you? Barbados, Antigua and Barbuda, St. Kitts and Nevis, and other former British slave colonies have higher rankings on the UN's Human Development Index than Brazil, Mexico, or many other Spanish-speaking South American countries. How has the British Empire disadvantaged the Caribbean nations? It's not clear to me. But let's test this further, and let's go and look and compare the nations of the Caribbean with modern West Africa, the original homelands of Caribbean slaves, to see what life is like there. GDP per capita in Benin is 1,430 $1,000. In Barbados, it's $17,000, over 10 times higher. Life expectancy in Benin is 62. In Barbados, it is 79. Rather than writing checks to well-off areas of the world, why not focus on countries and areas that are actually impoverished and require aid, financial aid not attached to alleged attempts to cleanse one's soul? It can't be clearer. While slavery was abhorrent for those who were enslaved, had they stayed in Africa, the lives of their descendants today would be unquestionably worse. So what exactly, actually, is Britain being asked to pay reparations for? Because Britain wasn't the first empire in Africa, in the India, in the Americas, but it was the most benign, and the benefits from it far exceed those, for example, of the Islamic and Indian empires that carved up India, of the Ashanti Empire, of the Dahomey Kingdom, and all of the hundreds and thousands of slaves that were ritually sacrificed every year in Benin. And the Benin Bronzes were mentioned. The Benin Bronzes commemorates those who actually owned slaves. So whilst on the one hand, I can understand why you would protest Coulson's statue, why is there a celebration of the Benin Bronzes when they also commemorate slave owners? So why are we apologizing for Britain? Are we apologizing to Britain for introducing nutrition and food storage policies that led to a decline in the subcontinent's processes of famine that happened every 40 years in India? There was a famine. The population of India soared from 170 million to 450 million over the course of the Raj because of medicine, health, and accurate and proper nutritional standards and food storage compared to how it had been. There had never been in history of India such a surge in population growth. And let's not forget also what Britain did for women's rights, because I think it's fair to say that it's thanks to the British Empire that we have had the progression of women in Africa and India through society. Because, of course, India's history is one of female oppression. It was the British who abolished suti, the burning of widows on the funeral pyre of their husbands. It was the British that stopped the infanticide of young girls. And it was the British who allowed Hindu widows to remarry. I'm sorry if you don't like the facts, but facts are actually facts. Universities were brought into Africa and India by the British. There will be no system of democratic legislatures within these regions. As Steven Pinker has written, pre-state societies before the British Empire arrived were on average far more violent than even the most brutal of modern states. So whilst many wrongs were committed in the 19th and 20th centuries, the modern success of Britain's former colonies today in the 21st century is due in large part to their colonial inheritance. The English language and the common law enabled them to become global players. Their civic institutions, the police, the military, the civil service, the judiciary, parliament, universities, every region of the world you go to, British colonies are the ones most likely to be the most developed, the wealthiest, and the most democratic.
Wow. I mean, talk about a tour de force over facts. What he said there was indisputable. For all the wrongs of colonialism, and we are certainly entering into a post-colonial world arising all around us, regardless, for all its wrongs, British colonialism imported a whole host of social and cultural practices that have clearly contributed to the former colonies' economic flourishing, from the establishment of private property rights, common law, to banking, to a flourishing university system, democracy. British colonialism did have a bright side to it. Again, the historical picture is nowhere near as clear-cut as reparations rhetoric would have us believe. So well done to this historian and the courage he has to stand up for truth in an otherwise very hostile and triggered environment. Hey, gang, I know what it's like to feel alone out there in these turbulent times, but I broke free. If you, too, have been looking for community.
Hi, my name is Brad Taylor, and I just finished my freshman year at RHS. I've been a part of District 196 schools now for 10 years, and I'm going to give you a glimpse today of what's actually going on inside these schools. Despite the board's attempt to deny it, District 196 schools are quickly becoming a place where promoting activism is actually more important than promoting education. I'll take you back to my first day at RHS this fall. The principal came out and gave us a heartfelt speech about equality and standing together. He began to list countless races, such as Latino, Asian, expressing how much they matter and how important they are. But never once did he mention a race or identity that reflects me or half the kids that were in the class. Now, members of the board, I know you haven't been to school in a while, and I know most of the people, I know none of you or most of you don't have any kids left in the school district. But you must admit how uncomfortable it will be to be characterized just by your skin color on the first day of school and be thought that you were wrong just because of your skin color. So I'll never forget the look one of my friends gave me from across the room as we were sitting there listening to this blatant bias being expressed in the so-called equity statement by the leader of our school. To be clear, I don't need you to tell me that I matter, but hearing the condolences given to other races and leaving just one race out, it inevitably you'll start to feel like you've done something wrong. And in our pursuit to unify us, he instead created unwarranted boundaries and barriers between his students, pitting us against each other based on characteristics that we can't control. In another separate instance, I was told that writing "All Lives Matter" on the whiteboard was political and could be seen as offensive. When I questioned the teacher after class, she told me that she didn't have any, just had to erase it, and it was quickly erased. There are political signs all over RHS, specific races that matter, specific perspectives that matter. But when I questioned the RHS administration about how these signs were political, they told me that they were supporting human rights. So I questioned why the equity statement couldn't represent all students. They told me that to even ask that question, I asked why that was, they told me, quote, "whites have a pretty good situation right now," unquote. So is that not racism? Disregarding my question merely because of the color of my skin. To be honest, after enduring a year of the people in charge telling me that I'm a racist and I'm privileged and pointing out our irreversible differences, I've never noticed race more. And it's becoming the first thing I notice when I meet someone, which has never before been the case. RHS administration confidently told me that RHS students and staff are happy with their equity statement. But from my experience in talking with other students, this is not the case. I know many kids who disagree with their teachers, but they're too scared to stand up because they're worried that their grades will be docked and their learning experience will be affected. My honors government teacher, I'm not going to say his name, but he's mentioned that Democrats care more about all people while Republicans only care about themselves. And he's also inferred to us that socialism is better than democracy. He even had a statue. He had a statue of a socialist leader in his classroom. I've been told by a lot of kids that they just stay silent and adjust their schoolwork to reflect an acceptable opinion to secure a good grade. I've been approached by multiple teachers who have told me in private that they just want to say that they agree with me and they support me standing up, but they can't say it in front of the class for fear of being disciplined by the administration in some way or losing their jobs. There is clearly only one way to think in this district, and that is that they are teaching their kids to shut up if they don't agree. Now, members of the board, I want you to take a good look at yourselves in the mirror tonight and ask, are you really standing up for the equality of all people, or are you just pushing a damaging political ideology on our students? A fellow coworker at my job, who, by the way, is of color, discreetly told me that the schools seem to be pushing a very leftist agenda in class. This proved that not everyone is happy with your school, and not everyone who isn't happy is white. Now, due to all these instances I've mentioned and many more that I can't fit in this 5-minute speech, I've decided to leave this district and continue school on a private Christian school online. Able to learn in an environment that is not intent on punishing me daily for my skin color and political views. Now, regardless of how you take my speech, whether you just shrug it off as malarkey or Fox News talking points, I encourage you to think about it, because someday I'm going to be a leader. I may be the president, a governor, or just a professional golfer, but I will never stop believing that everybody has value, no matter their skin color or personal beliefs. And it's a shame that you're not going to be able to say that I was an alumni of RHS in District 196. Thank you.
Well, I don't think we should be teaching white privilege in the classroom.
Bro, real talk though, like brother to brother, teaching white privilege does not inherently mean black people are less.
Like, that's a great conversation for you to have with your child. But I don't think that taxpayer-funded hatred should be something that we allow in our schools.
Okay.
For black children to sit in a classroom and be told that because of your skin, well, doesn't matter how hard you try, you're really not going to go that far because the society hates you, and then you have all these structural barriers preventing your success. That is also wrong. That is not lessons of hope. That is not lessons of opportunity. And I think that is what schools should be about. You can't create the next generation of leaders if they are never capable of seeing themselves as leaders, right?
All this nonsense, homelessness, and all this other garbage y'all talk about, police violence and all this stuff, don't nobody care about that. Don't nobody real care about that. We care about our reparations, and we have to put white people on notice that we want our reparations, that our foreparents and us, we didn't work for free and underpaid and all this nonsense, and the white folks get away with it, and they talk about the great city they're building. No, we want our reparations, $3 million per person. $3 million per person right here in this city. That's the only thing black people got to care about. All this other little nonsense y'all talk about, we do not care about.
I'm so tired of y'all on these slave myths and narratives. Come to find out from one of our own independent researchers, Carter G. Woodson's, black people were the slave owners. We have a list here compiled from the census in the 1830s. More than 3,777 American Negroes owned slaves, mainly in Louisiana, the state with the most black slave owners. This number more than doubled by the 1840s. But these were the good masses. Whenever you hear that, that was the black slave owners. But they was enslaving their own family members. I know. They would go purchase these women off the plantations. And the Kevin Samuels of his day said, don't you just go give her her freedom because she's married now. You wait about 2-3 years. You know, if she don't submit, if she ain't good in bed, throw her right back into the slave trade. And that's what a lot of them did. Making about, with today's inflation rate, $25,000 for its day. But some of y'all was so happy when y'all thought y'all had white slave owners' surnames. Come to find out, those were black slave owners. That's why y'all had them surnames. So we have the proof right here. It's all listed. So y'all can drop a lot of them slave narratives. Look, the list still going. Look, that's a shame, y'all.
Heaven's good one. The next one I'm going to play is satire, actually, just a warning. Right after that, I'll play the actual, the woman comes on for an interview saying why she did it. It's actual satire, making fun of them on the left. So here, let me remove myself.
Activist teacher here, and I just got done reading a book about racism. And did you guys know that going to the bathroom in a toilet and indoor plumbing is actually from white supremacy and colonialism? So when the white colonists saw the indigenous that they were digging holes and going to the bathroom outside, they said that was more like animals, and the white colonists decided to have indoor plumbing and toilets to use the bathroom. And so I just want you to recognize that whenever you are using a toilet, you're basically paying homage to white supremacy and white colonists. There's a reason why the color of toilets are white.
Now to the latest Twitter sensation who had just about everybody fooled. She is a former teacher who has become a whistleblower against the hard left indoctrination in schools. This is the video that went viral and everyone thought it was genuine.
Hi, Miss Luna, activist teacher here again. And I just wanted to share with you guys about how I am starting a new communist lunch program in my classroom. So what I've been noticing is that my white privileged kids, they have much better lunches than my BIPOC students. So I wanted to make sure everything was more equitable in my class. So we started having a communist style lunch. So what I do is I ask all of the kids to put their lunches all together, every item of their lunch inside of a basket. And then at lunchtime, I distribute it all equally to them so that they can all have getting home. six-pack of Oreos. And I tell them, you know, even though I am doing my best to make this equitable, we also have to make up for 300 years of oppression.
That video had everybody on Twitter fooled because we see so many videos like that. But it's actually the comedic work of Carly Fontanella, and she joins me now. Carly, that was incredible. That went crazy. Tell me your reaction as you saw the millions of views on that video and everyone believed that it was genuine.
Well, I don't mind when Miss Luna, activist teacher, my satire character goes viral because I am just putting leftist beliefs in people's faces with comedic timing. And I think that people need to wake up. That's the reason why I created the character. I actually created the character on TikTok and got banned. So we're not allowed to make fun of the left. And so it got banned. And then I was decided, you know what? I'm just going to start posting these videos on Twitter. It's interesting because I've received hate from both sides as myself. When I post as myself, I received hate from the left. When I post as a satire character, I receive hate from the right, rightfully so, though, because I'm saying some of the craziest stuff. But I have to say it's some of the most polite hate I've received, because the hate from the left is like racial slurs, but the hate from the right is like, she should be fired. And of course, I should be fired if that teacher was real.
Well, there are teachers like that. We know that because we see these videos uploaded for real. But, and that mask you were wearing in that clip, that's real. That was sent to you by the education department or a union. Tell me the story behind that.
Yes, about a couple months after the George Floyd riots here in the U.S., I received an email from the superintendent of my school district saying that there is a gift for Black teachers. And in that gift was the Black Educators Matter mask, also a I Love Being Black sticker, a letter that said, I greet you in the ancient African greeting of Otep. There was some honey body wash. It was the most bizarre gift. And actually that video, I shared that gift in a video and that video went viral. And I received a lot of hate saying that I hate myself and I hate being Black because I didn't accept this weird pandering gift that was given to only the Black teachers. So yeah, we're going a little nuts over here in the US.
Well, particularly in academia, from universities all the way down to little kids, and you taught in the system for 15 years. Tell me what the impact of that is. What's the impact on the Black children and also on the white children? Are they being made to feel that they're guilty for the crimes of their ancestors? Is this collective guilt what's popular in the system?
You know, it's so sad because in my 15 years of teaching, I have seen America become more racist and our young people become more racist than they were 15 years ago. So, for example, in my district, they gave the students, there was a required class for ninth graders, and the students were given a privilege quiz where they divided the class. They had them to only do 15 questions, and they divided the class by privilege and asked them how it feels to be on the top and how it feels to be on the bottom. And these are vulnerable, developing young minds that are getting these narratives fed to them. Mm. And all I am seeing is anger, resentment, more racism, more just aggressiveness, especially for those that are left-leaning towards people that are rejecting these narratives, like what I've experienced in speaking up, which has been nonstop racism and racial slurs from the left for exposing this, which is really sad.
Well, I do wonder whether some of the obsession the left has with race and race politics is projection. It's whether it's their own bigotry, because if you are a person of color, and I've experienced this myself, and you challenge their worldview, they will come at you with the most vile, racist, and sexist abuse when it's supposed to be what they do against day and night.
Yeah, exactly. And it is, and they don't. In the U.S., like I've shared a lot of the comments I've received from them, and they always get taken down. These videos where I'm sharing all of the racist comments I've received, being called a COO N-word, a house N, a bed wench, just horrible things that I'm a 40-year-old teacher. Why do I deserve to be called these things? Because I don't want our children to be taught that they're victims or
favorite activist teacher, your alter ego?
Hi, it's Luna, activist teacher here, and I'm just getting fed up with all of the parents that like they need to be actively involved in their child's education. I mean, we are the trained professionals, not the parents. They don't know how to educate their kids. That's why they drop them off with us every single day. We are the ones with degrees. I mean, I got my 4-year degree in Indigenous basket weaving, and then I went to go get my teaching credential, which took a year. I am qualified to teach my student Kyle than his right-wing Trump-supporting parents. Parents' rights in education should
and very similar to that, and they're real, including this one. Have a look.
I have a master's degree because when I got certified, I was told I had to have a master's degree to be an Arizona certified teacher. We all have advanced degrees. What do the parents have? Are we vetting the backgrounds of our parents? We must remember that the purpose of public education is not to teach only what parents want their children to be taught. It is to teach them what society needs them to be taught.
And we've been on a journey with you in recent days as you try a new gender.
Day 7 of being a girl and...
Day 7 of being a dude. And it has been one full week. And man, I have learned a lot. I learned that I can wear the same shirt 2 days in a row and just put a little more cologne on. One of the biggest challenges that I've learned this week is that I have a lot of things I put in my pocket, like my pocket knife, and my chapstick, and my phone, and my wallet, and it was making my pants fall down, so I decided to start wearing a satchel.
This ideology take hold in many classrooms. Tell me about the gender confusion you saw in classrooms as well as the race politics.
Well, I have to say, 15 years ago, we had maybe one trans student in the whole school of 3,000 kids. Now we're having trans students, non-binary students in every single class. And this has become a social contagion in the US. And I think a lot of it has to do with TikTok. These kids are going viral for sharing their gender identities. Dylan Mulvaney's went viral for sharing his transition journey. And so I decided to mock it and be like, can I go get famous too? Put on a hat and put on a, you know, a beard filter and just totally make a mockery of gender stereotypes and say that I'm a man, because that's exactly what Dylan is doing. But there's so much attention that's happening for these people that are going viral, and our young people are seeing that and wanting to get onto the trend. This has become a social contagion, and it's a very alarming trend because it can lead to a lot of damage to their bodies if they really get into it and take the hormones and all of that other stuff.
Well, absolutely. And there's a fantastic book by Abigail Schreier on that very theme, on the social contagion. And Dylan's not just become a Twitter and TikTok sensation. They were in the White House, sat down with the president and were able to discuss this issue one-on-one with the president. So extraordinary stuff. Carly, thank you so much for joining me today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. And I actually have an internationally accredited online school for parents who want to pull their kids from these indoctrination camps. And it's called Exodus Institute. And you can find that information at thinkexodus.org.
My name is Ruben Young, and I'm a congressional candidate taking on Debbie Wasserman Schultz for Congressional District 25. And today I want to talk to you about that plan in California to give $5 million to every black person in California for reparations.
And I'm Laverne Spicer, and I'm running for Congressional District 22, right here in Florida. And we're here to talk about what is actually going to happen and take place in California if they give each person $5 million, which I don't ever believe that they would do in the first place. What you think is going to happen, Ruben?
Well, like you said, Laverne, it's going to create another kind of welfare program. The Democrats always want black people to be dependent on them. You know, Laverne, when you give me something, I'm not going to appreciate it because I didn't earn it.
I didn't work hard for it. I didn't acquire it. So now they are coming around, especially during election year, and giving $5 million so the people will be beholden to them so they can keep them in a position of power. That is wrong. We should reject that because they cannot pay for the amount of pain, as you said earlier, for slavery, for the killing and the murdering of babies during the enslavement. They can't make up for that, Laverne.
And not only that, you know, like what took place in the 60s, the way they destroyed the Black families. They took the fathers out of the home because they made promises, promises. Their promises always come with strings attached. Are we really ready for those strings that are going to be attached to this? It's going to bring more division in race relations, and all type of things are going to happen.
I think if they're going to talk about reparation, they should give everybody have 1 ounce of Black blood reparation. You have a lot of white people out here who have members of their family who happen to be Black people. What about their reparation? What about the pain that they went through? Or when we talk about reparation, we should include everybody in reparations because everyone needs to, everybody deserves true justice and fairness, Laverne.
Or are we just dangling carrots once again? And anyway, if they truly wanted to help people, what about all those homeless people? They have over 17,000 homeless people that are staying in the streets.
You're right.
They never did anything to try to help them.
That's right.
So now we're supposed to believe that you all are just going to give out $90-some thousand a month per person?
It's a facade. I believe in creating businesses. If you want to give somebody something, just don't dangle a carrot. If you give them something, that's going to be longer lasting. Job opportunity that falls in the line of business ownership. That's what the Black community need. Black community don't need any more handouts.
Black community needs generational wealth. At the end of the day, we're still struggling, and we need to stop, get off that Democratic plantation, and once again, stop believing their lies.
That's right. Stop believing the lies.
I was robbed on the street in Chicago in front of my son by Black women. This girl was punching me and took my wallet out. And I was trying to call the cop on these thieves. And people surrounding me, looking at me, screaming at me, "Why are you doing this? You're a racist. Why are you doing this? Why are you?" Because I was trying to call the cops on these thieves. That I'm the problem. Because they can never be oppressed, right? Because of their skin color.
Mm-hmm.
I don't deserve justice. I don't deserve compassion because of my skin color in America. I mean, this is another side of madness. This is another side of injustice. No place to go.
We don't.
This is the last hope for humanity. This is the last hope for me. And this is the only hope for my son. I have to fight. Because I know if we keep going this path of this equilibrium, we are going to end up like North Korea.
How is eating meat racist? I'll gladly tell you. Looks like we've got an oppressor on our hands. So, during slavery times, slaves did not get to eat the same things as their masters. They got the scraps that no one wanted. Chitterlings. Now that Black people have overcome slavery, they developed a rich barbecue culture to make up for all the meat eating that they lost out on. So when you go to the store and you buy a piece of meat as a white person, you are actively taking away a piece of meat that could be being enjoyed by a survivor of ancestral slavery. Eating meat is not only racist, but it's also anti-Semitic. During the Holocaust, Jews did not get to eat meat in labor camps. They ate potato soup, which would spill on their bodies, burning them and giving them infections. Now, Jews survivors eat a lot of meat, brisket. Just let them have that. Stop appropriating.
To hell with what National Geographic putting out. I'm telling you to your face here tonight, we gonna have to kill some little Penelopes and some little Robbies. You wanna be free, don't you?
Yeah.
Y'all bullshit me. Not sound like that.
Why we gotta kill them?
Kill them all.
You don't wanna be free sounding like that. Do you wanna be free?
Yeah.
Do you wanna be free?
Yes, sir.
Do you wanna be free?
Yeah.
That's why I got to fight this crap.
regardless to how you feel about me, regardless to how anybody in this damn world feels about me, I'm going to fight this goddamn white man, whether you like it or not. Right. Oh. I believe in the death and destruction of white people, each and every one of them. That. Don't give a damn if the little bastard just came out of his mom's womb 3 seconds ago.
So are you a white woman? Consider yourself anti-racist? Great. Okay, so I just wanted to check in and make sure you were doing your homework.
Yeah, we
have homework. We have to unpack our shit.
It's actually a group project, but there's steps that we all have to take. So the first step is to listen to the voices of Black and other people of color, which we can do right here on TikTok. We can go to their pages, we can watch their content, and we can not say a word. As White Woman Whisperer says, we should wait and ask ourselves, why am I talking? A lot of Black creators have created communities with a low context culture. This means you're not going to understand what's going on right away. And because they don't owe us labor, we're going to just watch, enjoy, and learn. And when we find ourselves feeling offended, that should signal to us that we have some more things to unpack. And when we find something that we need to unpack, we're going to go follow more Black creators and do even more listening. And that cycle continues forever as we clean out our white ignorance.
And then I'm a big believer in affinity space and affinity work. And I think people of color need to get away from white people and have some community with each other. And I'll let that go and maybe see if anyone else wants to pick it up.
Chairman of the Defense Select Committee, Tobias Elwood, said the force had identified around 160 cases of positive discrimination had taken place. The news comes as Labour's Race Equality Task Force is expected to ensure Black access lucrative government contracts.
It's this conversation that we're actually having is about race equity, and that very much connects to positive discrimination. That's the only way that you can achieve race equity. So I just want to make it very clear. For me personally, if you have a culture of prejudice, it's quite clear that you're going to need quotas. And so if you didn't have the culture of prejudice, you wouldn't need quotas. And so for me personally, I don't need from a white person. What I need is for white people to get out of our way. And so in other words, work on your prejudice and you won't need quotas.
Get out of the way!
Okay. But leveling the playing field.
Sorry is, to cut, no, no,
sorry
it's
to cut you,
no,
off, but you, it is about... You... The playing field.
You
That's
believe,
why they've decided
you
to
believe
go
that Britain is structurally racist, don't you?
Something
You've had to say, you believe Britain is structurally racist, right? You're not going to deny that. No,
it is
not. Yeah. That is
this
a massive,
is.
Massive.
Do you understand that every human
untruth.
Being has prejudice?
Okay, it is
so
an untruth.
Do you understand that every human being
it is
has
an untruth?
Is that something that you understand, Peter?
No, no, you're not paying this. You're not, I'm not going to play your game.
I'm not playing your game. Prejudice. Do you understand that?
This is a form.
Is that something that you understand?
This is a form. This will be a form of state racism,
Please
in a way. You do not fight racism with other races.
This is the foundation for all forms of structural racism and any other discrimination, including racism, misogyny, sexism, and
these are cliches. These are just cliches in your mouth.
It is an honor to be on this desk every day. It really is. But what we've just witnessed is the problem with this show, where we create narratives that do not exist in reality. The white voters that vote on NBA are racist. That are they favor white people. You just said that. Yes, you did. Yes, you
did.
Yes, you did. That is exactly what you implied, Kendrick Perkins. That is exactly what you implied. Secondly, hold on.
I did not call. I stated the facts. And you're not about to sit up.
We all know what you implied the other.
It's the facts.
Examples that I found in my reporting. I've done an investigative series on four Florida public universities, looking into their DEI programming, doing the Sunshine Document requests, and getting their materials. And I found that they really practiced four key behaviors, four key concepts. The first is that they're turning the DEI offices into ideological programs that push critical race theory as the default ideology of the university. For example, at Florida State University, they've created a social justice ally training program that denounces the United States as a matrix of oppression that has resulted in, quote, racism, classism, religious oppression, sexism, heterosexism, gender oppression, ableism, adultism, and xenophobia. They categorize white students, faculty, and staff as an oppressor group, guilty of cultural racism. Encourage all of these members of that class to use their unearned privilege against themselves and, quote, destroy them.
It sounded like a fucking, I said that was a gunshot.
I didn't hear it. I mean, maybe it's a big shot, but it seems fine. It's a
notebook. Yeah, there it goes. No, he just put a magazine in it. He's still trying to load it.
Oh my God! He just fucking killed him. He just fucking killed him, dude.
Oh, you understand love, don't you?
No. No, I do not understand anything about white fragility.
White fragility? What's that supposed to mean?
You know what it means! You're doing it right now!
Doing what?
Being defensive. About race. Robert DiAngelo wrote a whole book about it. Read it.
Yet again. Same, cover and everything.
My dad wouldn't even look at the diary. He said his people would never own slaves. How could he just dismiss me like that?
White fragility.
Oh, Brother Kwame.
POV. A Florida classroom.
If you're Hispanic living in the United States, have you ever been asked the question, well, how Hispanic are you? So I'm half Hispanic, my mom's Mexican-American, and my dad is white. I just moved across the country to work for a Mexican-American congresswoman. And today we're getting a lot of phone calls criticizing the congresswoman's heritage. there was a media company that wrote a hit piece on the congresswoman, and there was a lot of angry people on the left calling in, just saying that the congresswoman was not Hispanic enough to label herself as Hispanic. I proceeded to tell these people, well, I'm also half Hispanic. My dad is white and my mom's Mexican American in the same exact way. Does that make me not Hispanic enough? And then all of a sudden they turned that around and started making fun of me and saying, oh, that's wonderful. I'll buy some tacos from you, Lolita, and just being very, very condescending. Anyways, I bring this up not to be like, boo-hoo, poor me. But I bring this up because there's a lot of people that think that the left is just this party of love and light and acceptance and accepting all colors and genders and backgrounds. And I just want to share these stories to show that this is not true. Sorry, there was a motorcycle outside. Anyways, I bring this up not to be like, boo-hoo, poor me, because I've literally been called güera and gringa by people in my own community for my whole life. It's literally just called the B and C word all day long by all these people who are supposedly accepting and loving of all colors. So, just a couple thoughts.
But first, let's take a moment and check in on the leader, Joe Biden, who this week was given a clean bill of health from his physician, who declared Joe is healthy and vigorous and is fit to successfully execute the duties of the presidency.
Bridge over the over the Holly River. Look, and Warsaw, or excuse me, Washoe County in Nevada. We're spending $89 billion to add several lanes.
Brilliant. And Biden was this week in no mood to answer questions about his weird response to random balloons being shut down. And then he got very angry when journalists asked questions about his family's dodgy business dealings with China. Give me a break, man. But back to that routine physical he completed this week, where an extremely detailed neurologic exam found no sign of cognitive decline, none at all.
You know, our natural wonders inspire, and the reflection inspires our to take action. You know, America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was in the foothills of the Himalayas with Xi Jinping, traveling with him. I guess we traveled 17,000 miles when I was vice president. I don't know that for a fact. A solid meeting they make a very good point. Here's the deal. Here's what drives the driver in the states that are affected.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the go, you know the thing.
You know the thing. Joe Biden has been cognitively sound for years. I mean, only a perfectly sane man in peak physical and mental condition would recount a story like this.
And Corn Pop was a bad dude, and he ran a bunch of bad boys. And I did, and back in those days, you show how things have changed. One of the things you had to use, if you used pomade in your hair, you had to wear a bathing cap. In those days, you used to remember the straight razor, you'd bang them on the curb, get them rusty, put them in a rain barrel, get them rusty. I got hairy legs that turned that turned blonde in the sun. And the kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down so it was straight, and then watch the hair come back up again. They'd look at it. So I learned about roaches. I learned about kids jumping on my lap. And I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
I'm sorry. Yes, no man has ever been better equipped to lead the United States, and indeed all of the free world, and the current commander-in-chief. We're in good hands, folks.
Oh, gosh. Unfunny. No, all that racism stuff is to bring down America and install socialism. They want 100% control. they'll own everything and they'll be happy and you won't. You'll be jumping from the rooftops just to get out of the situation, you know. It's just no living in it, you know. So, all right, I'm going to end it there. Hopefully I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.